You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. So happy to be here with you today. Now, the other morning, I was stopped in my scroll by this headline from Bustle. My therapist is a TikTok star. I mean, for some people, it's a dream come true. For others, it's their worst nightmare. And I wanted to know a little bit more about this. So I'm going to read you the first paragraph of this story. While scrolling TikTok in 2022, Kaylin came across something unexpected. A video about relationships and anxiety made by her therapist. She wasn't sure how it found her, since they didn't have each other's numbers. But what was most remarkable about this experience was that it had happened before. She had come across her previous therapist online on YouTube in 2022. And had been uncomfortable then, too. That was actually part of the reason why I was like, I think I'm going to stop therapy for a while, the Los Angeles-based 29-year-old says. Oh. This brings up so many thoughts, so many issues, so many problems, I think. I mean, finding a therapist is hard enough as it is. Figuring out how to pay for therapy is often impossible. And now we have to be asking, are you also on the TikToks? Oh. Here to talk to me about all of it today is the author of this piece for Bustle, Kate Lindsay. Okay, Kate, I am so excited to have you on today because this is a topic I think about a lot, and not just with therapists, but with everyone, and especially because I have a podcast and I have a very pathetic social media following, but following nonetheless. And, you know, does my gynecologist follow me? Do my kids' teachers follow me and listen to me? And like, how would they feel if they heard me talking about certain things? I feel like the world that we live in right now is so strange because we all seem to have many different kinds of identities, like both public and private. And you really got to the heart of that in this piece called My Therapist is a TikTok Star. And I want to dig into all of it. I want to get into all of it. I read a little bit about the story in the introduction, but tell me about Kaylin. Tell me about the person that you opened the story with.
Yeah. So when I went kind of looking for this one was an interesting one when it comes to finding people for it, because lots of times TikTok can be a really great tool because, kind of for similar reasons you were just saying, everyone is posting everything online. So like if I'm looking for sources who have had a particular experience, they've posted about it and they're really easy to track down. With this, I thought it would be as easy as it has previously been. And this was a little bit more difficult because, well, it was like, I knew statistically there had to, like, there are tons of TikTok therapists and they all presumably have multiple clients. I was like, I know this is a thing, but this is something that isn't getting posted about as much. When I was searching for it, it was people who didn't have TikTok therapists, but were talking about how much they'd hate it if they found their therapist on TikTok. So it took a bit of digging. And Kaylin is someone, she was actually the first person I found. She just sort of had, I think I found a post, I think maybe on Twitter, just about this happening. And I reached out. And it was so interesting because not only had it happened to her once, it had happened to her twice, where she had realized that the therapist she was speaking to had a social media presence. In one case, it was YouTube. And so we kind of joked about it on the phone, the idea of you get a new therapist because your old therapist, you had some discomfort with their social media presence. And then you're like, oh my gosh, not again. That's basically what happened with her. She just, rather than having any super concrete issues to point to, the underlying concern that the conversations they were having in confidential sessions could end up informing content, or even if it didn't, if it just having that suspicion, like she would see a YouTube video and be like, I wonder if that is something they're doing because we said this specific thing in session. I think it just led to a certain level of, I guess, paranoia and distrust that you just obviously don't want in a relationship with your mental health professional.
No, you sure don't. And we've done episodes before about therapy, social media. When I think that the one I did was about 3 years ago. So it was probably before the rise of therapy talk, mm-hmm. Before it was as big as it is now. But what I know is that there really aren't that many boundaries or regulations mm-hmm. about whether or not therapists can be on social media. What did you learn about that?
Yeah. So this I thought was interesting. So I spoke to, because one of the things when my ed and I were talking about this, we were like, I wonder what they're being told, like, you know, what therapists to be are being told in school about this. And so I got in contact with a professor at NYU and sort of asked about it. And they said that basically there isn't. So what they said was that the sort of ethics guidelines for counselors in general have not been updated since 2014. So there is language about social media in that, but it is for 2014 social media, which is before TikTok. And also just like more importantly, before what TikTok popularized, which is an algorithm that pushes your content out to strangers. And the whole point of posting on social media is to reach like as many people as possible versus talking to each other. So there aren't really rules that account for the gray areas that come up when it's like you don't know who will see this. And I also think a big thing that is at the root of a lot of people's concerns about TikTok therapists, not just that, oh, are they saying things from their private sessions online? But I think for me, what would concern me a little bit is where the reward mechanisms of social media, and particularly of algorithms, where you're really incentivized to make content that reaches as many people as possible. And you kind of subconsciously might alter your content to be a bit more controversial or grabby. And a therapist wouldn't be immune to that. It's very like chemical. And I think that's when you can get instances of bad practice online, which there have been. But like we were, you know, back to the original question, that's not really something they have any guidelines for about what they are and aren't allowed to post. They just kind of really broadly, you know, they can't interact with their clients on social media. And of the therapists I've spoke to, they'll do things like make sure there's really clear disclaimers that what they're posting is not therapy. It is edutainment or, mental health content. Things like that where it's more about the relationship between them and the client and maintaining confidentiality. There aren't really any guidelines about, you know, how should they what shouldn't they be posting on TikTok?
Right, right. Or should they not be on at all? I do think that there is a universe where maybe you take some kind of oath, thou shall not be on social media. I think it is just a quagmire right now.
I know. And it makes me think about, because I think, like, you know, maybe 10 years ago, even that ask is like, would not have been that great. Like, I think about, it's still a little bit similar to like the shift I've seen with teachers on social media, which is when I was in high school, I remember the only real rule, well, like, I mean, there was so much stuff about a teacher needed to be careful about their social media presence. And then we weren't allowed to friend our teachers on Facebook until after we graduated and stuff like that. And now teachers show up on my TikTok all the time, like in their classroom, filming their students sometimes. Like it reminds me of therapists in a similar way where I'm a little bit like, wait, shouldn't there be rules about this?
Yes.
And I think the hard part now is like, before, like 10 years ago, being like, okay, don't be on Instagram, that's not some huge loss. But I think because of the pandemic and just how our relationship with social media has shifted over the past decade, it's a lot more integral to how we live life. And it feels like it's something we can't live without.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that there is also an argument for, well, this is my brand.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, spread my teachings, spread my knowledge. This is how I acquire new clients. Maybe I'm working on a book. And these days we do all have to be a brand in a way. I know that I'm exhausted by my brand building right now. I say that every time I say that, though. Listeners write to me and they're like, you need sleep, Jeff. you don't sound well. And I'm like, no, I mean, I'm okay. I'm okay.
Yeah.
The Sicilian Inheritance is the book of the summer because I won't shut up about it. But I do believe that there are some spaces that should be closed spaces.
Yeah.
And conversations that should just be intimate and not available for content. For people that don't know about this, I want to get into a little bit more about the world of therapy talk.
Mm-hmm.
But really quick, let's take a very quick break. And when we get back, you're going to explain the big, crazy world of therapy on social media. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, and I am very much a parent, you have your fair share of big talks with your kids, especially if your kids happen to read your very adult novels because they're an advanced reader and you just can't rip it out of their grubby hands. But that is another story altogether. One of those big talks that you should be having is about money. I talk to my kids about money all the time because it is something that my parents didn't talk about with me. Greenlight can definitely help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I have recently started doing an allowance for my 6-year-old, and he loves it. He also loves doing chores for money. Like, I do not think that we can start them too early these days. And Greenlight makes it very easy for him to see exactly how much money he is making for which chores. It also helps my kids, even the four-year-old here, build financial literacy and independence by learning how to earn, save, and spend wisely. The Greenlight app also comes with an in-app financial literacy game called Level Up that helps kids build money confidence through videos, bite-sized challenges, mini games, and more. More than 6 million parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices, and I am all in. I'm having a good time with it. I tried a lot of allowance apps, and many of them were very, very bad. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/influence. That's greenlight.com/influence to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/influence.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Okay, we're back. For people who don't know about this world, talk to me about therapy talk. What is this?
Yeah, so I think sort of from the conversations I've had and just what I've observed, I think therapy talk was really like so many other things. I think you could make the same, you could draw the same line. I think was really a product of the pandemic, which was that everything moved online. Like, you know, if we just isolated the therapists, I mean, they, you know, you could do Zoom therapy as normal, but they, I just think how they did therapy was really drastically altered. And I think posting online, well, first off, mental health content has always been very popular online. But I think therapy talk in particular, I think came about in the pandemic when therapists sort of realized that they could bring, especially with sessions also being digital, that they could bring that same type of guidance to, instead of an individual person, to a wider audience. I think it was a way to find community with other therapists during that time, but also I think just a way to talking to the world in a time when we were all shut up at home. And so what these videos are, I mean, they range so much. Some, and every therapist has a different style. It'll be, you know, signs you have anxious attachment or something. Like, it'll basically be a BuzzFeed listicle, but in short form video form. And so it'll talk you through that. Or, you know, they'll answer questions from people about, I don't know, like how certain, like, not like, you know, not to be diagnosed or anything like that, but like questions about like how being a therapist works. And they really kind of sort of through this became personalities and, okay, and would just, that's what their content was. It was a little bit more broad, public facing, digestible little tidbits of advice. And, you know, sometimes, you know, one therapist I spoke to in the piece named Meg, who joined TikTok, she joined, and I think this is the case for a lot of other people, because as TikTok therapy became so popular, TikTok therapists, you would see people who maybe you disagreed with, or who were talking about things in a way you didn't like, or maybe a subject that you think is really important you just don't see in the conversation. And then you're like, okay, well, I have to come in and either correct this or fill this void, or I want to make sure, you know, that there can be so much bad information out there, so I want to be a source of good information. But it becomes like just this exponential growth because everyone kind of has their own motives. And like, crucially, the reason this is happening is because the content is popular. I mean, TikTok is very well known for people self-diagnosing themselves. Now, that's not anything new. I feel like when I was on Tumblr, that's what everyone was doing, was just self-diagnosing themselves with anxiety, which like I do have, but I definitely learned from Tumblr. And so this is a similar thing here. It people, I think, love to be seen, love to have their questions answered. And I also think, in the more cynical sense, love to contort things about themselves or hardships they face, maybe into the language of maybe actually being a mental health issue. That's like very cynical. But I think that's why in that sense, it speaks to so many different people, whether they're earnestly coming for help or they take comfort from the content in some way. And it's still strong. I mean, it has not waned. I don't really get this on my For You page because I have a therapist who I go to for these things. And I also, I think when probably you probably feel this way too, when you cover this stuff, you just have like an innate exhaustion with it.
And skepticism.
And skepticism. Because, you know, the key difference between a TikTok therapist and a therapist in session is a therapist in session is talking to you and they know everything about you that you've told them. You probably have an established relationship, but on TikTok, they're talking to everyone. And
yes.
And so like they can't give you specified content. They don't know your situation. They also like can't be accountable to little caveats you may have. And I think something that the professor at NYU who I spoke to mentioned was that like just since TikTok therapists became a thing, there has been a rise just that he's noticed of clients coming in and sort of saying they already know what it is they're suffering from. And then you ask like, well, how do you know that? And it is from TikTok. And I don't want to write off how social media can be a tool in learning these things about yourself. But I think it just goes back to that like tendency to self-diagnose from content that is really general, not actually a therapist who is talking to you and knows you.
Totally. And you don't have to write it off. I can write it off. I'm just intensely skeptical. And mm-hmm. you said something that really, you know, sparked my interest before, that people have been doing this forever, mm-hmm. not just when the internet's been around. People have been getting self-help books and being mm-hmm. like, this is definitely me.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of media. Mm-hmm. I genuinely believe that social media makes it more dangerous because it is just available constantly and there's so much more of it. And it's mm-hmm. a thing that lives in our hand and that feels a lot more intimate and a lot more real mm-hmm. than buying some self-help book that you yeah. walked out to a bookstore to buy or reading an article in a magazine. Mm-hmm. There's just more of it. It's closer to us and it's more intimate, and that makes it seep into our brains
yeah.
in a different way.
And it's like infiltrating culture beyond just, you know, someone's own quest for self-improvement. I think, you know, I would say TikTok therapists, and not even them themselves, but the culture that they kind of really exploded or popularized, is responsible for things like therapy speak, which is basically when you're talking to a friend or a loved one who you should be able to sort of talk, I mean, and like to put it bluntly, normally with, but instead you're using this like language of therapy, and in many cases, or at least I feel, weaponizing the language of therapy to like avoid
to talk to your husband or your
yes,
friend.
Yes, yeah, to like avoid.
Yeah. Or your dog walker.
Yes, yeah, where it's just like.
You made me feel very unsafe.
Right, yeah. And it's something about therapy speak in general, I think, because you're using words about mental health, and we all like understandably want to respect mental health, it can be weaponized in a way that like shields you from being interrogated on the thing you're asking, because you're like, you've already kind of put up the trump card of therapy speak, where it's like, okay, well, if I feel like if I disagree with this person, I'm like being a bad person. And then it like, you know, it's a trickle down into like when you see conversations about, you know, I would never drive a friend to the airport, or like, you know, I'd be sitting on the phone comforting a friend is like too much emotional labor for me, like terms like that, where it's like, what is this? Because like what you're describing is just like what caring about another person is, and now you're and somehow like it sounds like if you don't want to be on the phone with a person and help them through an issue, then I just think that's not your friend. You're not doing emotional labor. You're not being subjected to some injustice. They are leaning on you for like what it is you should, if you are a person who feels friendship for them, it's something that you would like jump to do without thinking. It's just this weird boiling down to transactions, what being a human and having relationships with other humans is. And I don't think that's supposed to be the point of therapy, but I think it's, you know, when these terms that are meant for like specific situations get put in the hands of the masses, they can be used, I would say, like for worse. And as a way to like, I think it can feed into selfishness, I guess. I'm really trying to be diplomatic about certain things because I'm not actually like a hater. But I do think if you follow the effects of this to like the worst corners of it, that is a little bit what it shows up as.
No, I think you're right. I do. I do. You're much more diplomatic than I. My lack of a filter has just grown and grown in the past. I mean, I think that when you become a woman of a certain age, you just stop giving all of the fuck.
Oh, yeah. I think it's because I am so aware of, you know, I mentioned like I grew up on Tumblr, and I do think, or even, okay, even like a recent example is like my therapist and I recently came to the like conclusion that what I was dealing with was not just broad anxiety, but obsessional thoughts. And so we started looking at things through an OCD lens. But the only reason we came to that is like, because I forget what specifically, but like, I think I saw myself in something online that framed the thought patterns that this person was experiencing as OCD. And then I was like, wait, that's interesting. Let me look into this, because I always thought OCD was what this thing was. And so in that sense, it's like, okay, well, having that person speak up and be, you know, representation was helpful for me, because once my therapist and I switched to that framework, like we made so much more progress. So I'm like, well, I know, like, I don't want to be like, oh, it worked for me, it is bad for everyone else. But I think that's like a good example. But I think there's negative examples too, as there are with like everything in life.
As there are with everything in life.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I after I read your article, I started just digging through a lot of these accounts. And one of the things that I think we have to be aware of when we're looking at this content, and that's what I want people to take away from these episodes the most, it's just think critically about everything that you're looking at. And I think the biggest thing is, why is someone posting, right? So you have you mentioned Bay Area psychotherapist Meg Josephson. And, you know, she says that she started posting just to correct misinformation about mental health. But then, you know, things went viral and she got 250,000 followers, and it became what she calls a vital way to promote her practice. She says most of her clients come to her from social media, and that she recently landed a book deal. So what is the why there? I mean, you're like, this is not, I don't think this is any longer to help people. This is very self-promotional. And when you're in a role like therapist, that's where it starts to get dangerous for me.
I think about this a lot. Like, why am I posting even? Like, what? And I think in so many cases, and sometimes I think I can overthink it, but like, I can be aware that if I'm like, oh, I'm posting, I'm trying to think of like a concrete example, but like, you know, I'll always be like, what is the actual thing I'm trying to say? Because I'll be posting like, oh, here's a little like a little fun picture. And it's like, well, what am I actually trying to show on the picture? Like, okay, I actually remember an example, but it was like, it's so in the weeds that like, I feel insane. But I remember I wanted to film a TikTok in this little part of my apartment where on the wall in a certain area, I have framed an article I wrote for the New York Times. And I was like setting up the the camera. And it was like, I realized what I was trying to show with that angle was not what I wanted to say in the video. I wanted to have the New York Times thing in shot. And I got two in my head and I moved to a totally different place, because I was like, I can feel myself. That would be a disingenuous post, not in the sense that like what I was saying in it isn't true, but that there was like this weird ulterior motive in there that felt honestly like kind of embarrassing and almost like animalistic, but feels very real. And also like, I think because I'm like very, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this stuff, I went through the thought exercise of being like, wait, why am I actually doing this? But I think it's understandable if you're just a regular person going about your day to like not do that interrogation. In fact, it's like exhausting to do that interrogation every time you post. But so I think then that sort of the secret motive can come up. And in so many cases, if like the secret motive for putting something on social media is attention. I mean, like when you really, it's, you can't really pretend it's anything else. And I think sometimes, especially as adults or professionals, we want to be like, oh no, we're above that. But like, no, it's not. Like,
you're not.
I posted a TikTok the other day that was like weighing in with my own experience on like what, like a sort of controversial TikTok. And like, I could pretend that it was for some other reason, but like, I was drawn to do it because I knew it was a buzzy topic and the TikTok would do well, and it did well. And it's like, my motive for that was attention, if you really just like boil it down. And I think that's when social media can be really difficult. And like, this is when I say I like really overthink this. I'm like, why am I posting this? Is it just for attention? And if the answer is like really yes, I'm like, okay, I don't really want to do that because it makes me feel bad. But I think, you know, when you mix that with something like mental health, or like, you know, in the case of like Meg, when you were getting like these incredible opportunities, like a book deal, mm-hmm. you're, even if you're, you know, a therapist who is evolved and like an expert in these things, that doesn't mean you're not immune to that same like little, you know, monkey part of your brain that's like more attention. Good. Okay. But then that's when you can post problematic stuff. Like, not, this isn't Meg, but some examples of, there was a really like prominent instance that happened, I think 2 years ago. It's in the piece, but it's with a therapist who was using a sound. The sound was someone chanting, Holy Spirit activate. And it's always so, by the way, insane to explain a TikTok trend. It like always just comes out.
It's in, so crazy.
Yeah. In words, it's like, what? But basically the sound was used when to sort of soundtrack any skit that was about needing help from like a higher power. And so people were using it during times when they were like exasperated. Mm-hmm. And this therapist made a video with the sound, and she kind of used text to say like, when your client wants to trauma dump on the first session. So number one, trauma dump is therapy speak. It's not even real. Like, I don't even think like in session a therapist would ever use that. But also what that was, I mean, there's like so many things wrong with that. The big one being is like, she was like, maybe still is, she did lose clients from this, but she was a trauma counselor. And so it's like, if anywhere it should be permissible to quote unquote trauma dump, it should be in session with your trauma counselor. And so people got really upset by it, and rightly so, being like, wait, now I'm worried I'm like saying too much to my therapist. And really, that therapist doesn't think at all about trauma dumping. What she thought about was, okay, here's a trend that's trending. This is a buzzy word. And I think in her assumption, she thought this would be funny. But like, that was the motivator. And what it actually did was harm potential current patients and potential patients. She lost, I know, a BuzzFeed reported this, like two clients from it. And then, I mean, even like a recent one that I saw when just scrolling was a therapist talking about like when she's wondering how a client is affording this session, and then she overhears the parents in the waiting room, and then it's like, oh, and so like the joke is like, oh, the parents are paying for it. But it's like, wait, why is my therapist thinking about my finances, like, mm-hmm. or like judging me for my parents paying for therapy, like all this stuff where it's just like, you're trying to be funny. You're trying to be relatable, and you're like relatable too close to the sun. And then you're like actually making a client feel judged or unsafe. And that is like, no therapist wants to do that. But that is, I think, when you get the little animalistic draw of like attention on social media, and that's the lens through which you're thinking about what you post, there's a lot more potential to make those missteps.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take one more quick break. And when we get back, I want to figure out if this is something that patients should be screening for. Should we ask our therapist if they're on social media?
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Okay, we're back. Now, we've been talking about your own personal therapy. Is your therapist on social media?
She is not, but I did, when I was first started looking into this piece, before I even interviewed anybody, I just was like asking her about it. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I want to know, like, not like, obviously not for quote, like quotation or anything, but I was just like, what is the vibe on this? And she is not, but she said she has thought about it, not necessarily putting her face out there, but I don't, you know, going the infographic route or something. And I do think, like, my assumption is maybe that when that's what people in your community are doing, when it's becoming a trend, you do get like pulled towards it. But so no, mine is not, but she's social media curious, I guess.
Social media curious. Social media curious. Yeah. And you pulled a couple of quotes from people on the socials, you know, saying, you know, what they would feel like if they found out if their therapist was on social media. One says, if I saw my therapist on TikTok, I would simply pass away. If I saw my therapist giving advice on TikTok, I would kill her.
Yep.
Okay. The internet's a bad place. But wow. But I do not advocate killing anyone, people. I don't. But
not that cynical.
But I do think it is a fair question. I wouldn't go to a therapist who's a social media therapist. I was actually just listening to an episode of Modern Love with Esther Perel, who I like a lot, whose books I read. Would never go to her as a marriage therapist because I'm like, I don't want my life is already public enough with what I choose to put out there. But that I don't want my therapist to be a public figure. And I do think that, and Esther Perel is a very, you know, I think she used to be a very specific example, right? There used to be like three high profile therapists out there. And now with many, many therapists on TikTok, I think it's a question worth asking when you're when you're shopping. And reminder to everyone that finding a therapist is so hard anyway. Getting it paid for by health insurance is so hard anyway. So, like, it just feels like we're adding another hurdle to find someone to care for our mental health, to be like, hey, are you on social media? And if so, where do you get your content and do you talk about your clients? That feels so uncomfortable, but also now necessary to me.
Right. Yeah. So this was something that I spoke to some of the therapists about, and Jeff Gunther, who's Therapy Jeff, he's like, probably one of the better known, like when you say TikTok therapist, I think his face pops up for a lot of people.
And his name is Therapy Jeff.
Therapy Jeff.
Some of these names, though, are just like, okay.
But so what was interesting for him, because I asked him about this, he has not taken on any new clients since he started posting on TikTok for that reason, which is that he doesn't want anyone coming in with like a preconceived notion of him from what they see online. And it was very interesting because he was like, you know, because he sort of tells this anecdote when he first started posting, he hadn't told his existing clients yet. And then they came across it organically. And he was saying the weirdest part for both of them was that like when he's online, he's doing a persona and that it doesn't necessarily mesh with how the patients know him in the room. So he won't take any on. I am curious about, like, he's been a therapist for a very long time. So he has, I think, just a lot of pre-existing clients, because I'm curious if that's sustainable to not take any, like, what is he going to, I don't know. And I guess I'm not his business manager, so that's for him to figure out. But for Meg, she was brand new. She didn't have any clients when she started posting. And now it has been a really helpful way for her to get clients. And I can see a case like when I was looking for my therapist, I didn't want them on social media in that way, but I needed them to understand social media because so many of my, I mean, you heard me talking about the New York Times thing being in frame. Like I have a lot of neuroses that's very like social media based. And I was like, I need a therapist who understands like why it matters and why like it's like valid to be anxious about this. And what Meg was saying was that, you know, you can see how they talk and move and all this stuff. And maybe it helps you feel more connected to them before you go to them. But the really blanket thing to what you were saying is that, like, I think the thing that can be agreed, even though the guidelines haven't been updated, is that if a therapist has like a public facing social media presence, they need to disclose that in something called an informed consent form when you join them. And so it like says up front, like, it's all this stuff about like, if I see you in person, I won't go up to you, all this stuff. And then, you know, I had to sign one for my therapist a few years in when she updated hers, just to say that like she would never seek me out on social media if I messaged her. Like, she's like, I think, I literally don't know, I haven't looked for it, but I imagine a personal Instagram account. Like, if I DM that, she will not answer. So that's like a form I sign. And so when you make public facing content, the sort of suggestion is in there, it needs to say, I am public facing on social media, and, you know, say like, I don't talk about our sessions, or like, if you comment, I won't respond, like all this stuff. But yeah, I think it needs to be something upfront, because I think the thing that everyone described of the clients who I spoke to, now none of the clients like left their therapist, I think, because like, you know, you read those tweets and everyone's very like aggressive about if they see their therapist. But if you like them and you have a longstanding relationship and then you come across them on social media, it's not as much of a deal breaker, at least for the people I spoke to. It was kind of like surprising, and they had to like sit with it for a second, but they kept going, but they didn't bring it up with their therapist, which is, I just think it needs to not be a secret. It needs to not be that unspoken thing, because it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. Whereas if there's a level of discomfort in that relationship at all, it's not going to be effective. So yeah, I think it needs to be very upfront. It needs to not be a surprise at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't think it can be a surprise. And I have such mixed feelings about it. I do, because even if you're not openly talking about specific clients, and people said to you in this piece that I'm not talking about our sessions, but these sessions influence me. Mm-hmm. And they might subconsciously influence the content I'm creating.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a line. That's a very, very blurry, confusing gray area.
And I think it's interesting because, and it's like a question for some like higher power, because I think it's like, and I can, you know, like, I think about it from like my culture writer brain, where it's like, oh, if you see something popping up in a bunch of different places, it's like, oh, this is a larger conversation. And like, that's how I write an article. And so it's interesting that like for them, like if they're talking to clients and they're seeing like a lot of issues pop up, like I asked this question of Meg when I like interviewed, I actually interviewed her for my newsletter way earlier. And I had asked like, what's something you're seeing? And so she's able to identify like a lot of people really have the fear that they're in trouble. That's like what it distills down to. But so like that comes from like, she knows that from sessions. And so, yeah, it's like, what are you comfortable with being inspiration? And I think even if it's not, you know, about you specifically, like it can't, like, oh, it's totally against the rules if they did that because of confidentiality. But, you know, are you comfortable with being inspiration is like a question you would have to ask yourself. And I think for a lot of people, really for valid reasons, the answer would be no. And yeah, I'm like, I guess I wouldn't care, but you know, it's really, really, really to each their own. And so it just is like what we were saying, like it needs to be really clear if the therapist wants to be on social media, like their client needs to know, because I think the biggest betrayal, the biggest like gray area that I think would absolutely be seen as a betrayal is finding out that even if they aren't naming you, even if you don't hear your exact situation, if you can see that like clearly your therapist is talking about something online that you guys also spoke about, and you didn't know that totally understand why that feels like a huge betrayal of trust. And I think it kind of comes back to something that is like plagued me about social media since I was like a tween, which is when you post online, I think it's sometimes easy to forget. You think you're not talking to real people. Like it just kind of goes out into a void and then you get given numbers. And I think therapists or like teachers, like what we were talking about, that's an example of where like it, you would get the, I can get away for the most part when I, as a journalist, when I talk about my articles on like TikTok, I don't really ever get like, I hardly get people in real life who I talk to who read my stuff. And when I do, it's very weird and I don't know how to interact with it. But, you know, with a therapist or a teacher, that's way more likely that you're going to get in front of someone you have an actual relationship with or awareness of. And I think it's easy to forget when you're just posting to an algorithm and then just getting lots of numbers. Yeah, it's really thorny. And I think the big thing is they gotta update those ethics guidelines.
They do. They do. Mm-hmm. My last therapist was so strict about not talking about his personal life. Mm. I was obsessed with his wonderful mid-century modern furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And I would constantly be like, "Where'd you get that lamp, Christian?" And he'd be like, "We don't talk about me."
I'm like, that's so funny.
Just tell me where you got the fucking lamp, because I can't think about anything else until you tell me. But that felt like a serious code, like a line he'd drawn. And I do think he was a certain age. He was probably 50. And I think that the new generation of therapists, it's just a little different. Everything seems a little blurrier to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it has to be. I mean, the answer to so many of these questions, I think it has to be transparent and open. In lieu of like any answers to the gray area, the best thing that like the people can do is just like, you have to be upfront and honest and allow for uncomfortable conversations, like your patient being like, "I feel betrayed by this."
Exactly. Exactly. And I think transparency is going to be the key going forward. None of this is going away.
Right.
We're not getting off of our phones. Social media isn't disappearing. We know that the government is unlikely to regulate anything. Mm-hmm. So, yes, as creators, we need to be more transparent. I try to be as transparent as possible. I was like, you know, I desperately want to sell you books. I want you to listen to my podcasts. And I also share things about my life because I think it's important to share women's stories. That's my whole thing. I've got nothing else, people. But we don't see transparency in most of these accounts. And we have to view them also as media brands now. Mm-hmm. Everyone is their own little media brand. And so you have to judge it as thus and not necessarily as this is a therapist just trying to help people. Because I'm sure they are. I'm sure many of them are trying to help people. But they also want attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Sorry, you summed it up really nicely there.
Well, I loved this piece. This was so good. Bustle is doing such great work in an age where media is a shit fuck of dumpster fiery.
Yes.
Bustle is doing great reporting. So tell everyone where they can find you and the things that you write.
Yeah. So I am, you know, largely just an internet culture writer. I have my own newsletter called Embedded. And then I write for a few places pretty regularly. So yeah, Bustle's a big one. They have some great stuff. Then I'm also I will sometimes write for The Atlantic, GQ, Vulture, and then I'll just like pop up where you least expect it sometimes. But I would say Embedded's the place to go for like regular. I'm there a couple times every week with new and sometimes bizarre things on the internet.
Great. Actually, you know, I wasn't subscribing to Embedded, and
oh my
now,
gosh. Welcome.
Well, can you just add me? Can you just add my email address?
Oh yeah.
To it? Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely.
Great. Yeah. Embedded, guys. I love it when I discover new things. Well, this has been wonderful. Everybody, ask your therapist if they're on the TikToks, and then make up your own mind. We all deserve all the information. And that is all we have for today. I don't know about you, but I don't want my therapist to be on the TikTok and the Instagram. I mean, I feel like it's very difficult to make the call about what you share and what you don't share on social media. And there will inevitably be some bleed between what you do in your therapy sessions and what you're producing as content. And for me, that does seem dangerous. Thankfully, my therapists do not seem to be on the social media, but you never know. You never know. Thank you for being here with us today. If you love the show, leave us a rating in all of the ratings places. And as always, you can pick up a copy or many, many copies of the Book of the Summer, The Sicilian Inheritance, wherever you get your books. We're back in stock, people. We did a reprinting. Now go do something nice for yourself. You deserve it.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.